very important you don't screw this up. It's the last live show of the year.
Ah, thanks for that, Chief. Thanks, Chief.
Cool pep talk.
Yeah. Scene two.
Yeah, we should also finish these staff meetings up before the show.
Yeah,
welcome
that's right.
to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and seeing this is casual Thursday, chief assignment editor let me wear my kilt today, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we should... I'd really love to talk about
I don't want any business in front of the human rights.
Well, wait till the new year, maybe. I really
to go to the Human Rights Tribunal?
No, to talk about that story.
Oh, right.
I still wish my father was around. He would have loved that. He'd have been like, what do you mean they're no letting them wear it? Anyway, for another day.
It's a bit bizarre.
It's anyway. Totally bizarre, but I love it.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest in news from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we even sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be your downtown Guelph friends, who are going to come in and talk about their advocacy and raising awareness about homelessness in downtown Guelph and other poverty issues. That is going to be at the bottom half of the hour. For the first half of the show, we're going to talk about some of the latest from the Trump impeachment. It finally happened.
Really?
It's Christmas Day in politics, but that's okay. We'll get to that in a sec. We're going to start off by catching up with more local friends, at least nationally, internationally speaking. The House, I believe, has risen for the year. Short session that saw so much happen. We talked last week briefly about Andrew Scheer stepping down as the leader of the Conservative Party. This week we got Office Gate. Not Office Space, but Office Gate with Jolie Wilson-Raybould.
Yes, doesn't want to give up her, sounds like, premium office. It depends on who you're listening to on that one, because some are saying, oh, it's a really deluxe office. And then others are like, you know what? That building's a dump. So it's hard to say. But
well, it sounds like it's like a ministerial suite, they say. But it sounds like someone was kind of taking a dump on her, because nowhere does she say that she refuses to leave. That apparently there's some sort of negotiation afoot. Some like she's trying to find like different office space, because like they're not going to like take all her stuff out of the office and like leave it in the hall or somewhere, you know,
like so, an eviction kind of. But
right. So
yeah, they don't want those optics. No
it's,
way.
The story smells a bit like maybe someone like digging the knife in a bit and. Maybe reading a bit too much into what's going on, like turning it into like a kind of soap opera that nobody.
And yeah, it got, I wouldn't say weird, but when she had said, oh, well, I had it blessed by an elder, it's like, but couldn't you get the new office blessed as well? Like, I was trying to figure out that angle is like, yeah, it sort of makes sense. But at the same time, I don't know.
Well, I mean, she is an independent MP who won her seat running as an independent. So, you know, maybe she should just keep the office. I mean,
go for it.
Just she beat the odds. Yeah. She beat the odds and came back to Parliament as an independent MP.
An independent has ever seen, because normally it's like the broom cupboard or something, right? Or you're not really guaranteed an office on the Hill, and it's all under construction too, right?
Yeah.
So
they just finished year one of the construction.
Oh boy, another 40 to go. Probably they've got people squirreled away everywhere. I'm sure, like in town.
I mean, even like. Like Mike Schreiner, who's like arguably the low man on the totem pole at Queen's Park, being a caucus of one. I mean, his office is really nice at Queen's Park.
Well, that's right. You've been behind the curtain.
I have been behind the curtain.
I'll need to arrange that. We're talking about that. So,
yeah.
New year. Field trip. Field trip.
Field trip.
OS field trip in the Source Mobile. Right on. I'm excited.
All right. What else is going on? SNC-Lavalin.
Oh, yes. Top of the charts.
Top of the charts.
No, it is. It's like...
But so the executive there took a plea. He's pleading guilty to bribery over $5,000. Still, since I mean, it sounds a little low, but I guess that's the threshold is under $5,000 and over $5,000. So you could bribe someone to the tune of like several million dollars.
$4,999.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Somewhere. Yeah. And or you could bribe someone like $10 and get hit the other direction. But it's.
A $10 bribe. It's like, don't waste our time. But.
But I mean, what it does is, yeah, there was something hinky. It all worked out in the end. They get to keep building and they don't have to worry about losing government contracts, and all that foo-for-all from earlier this year seems to have been like pointless and for naught.
Yeah, and some of the commentary is like, oh, why did they even bother? It's yeah. like, well, it's because they didn't know it would work out that way.
Yeah, and Trudeau, to his credit, said that if he had known what was going to happen, he wouldn't have bothered with any of it.
Yeah, I saw that little... he had a one-on-one, I think it was maybe with Global or something.
He did a roundtable with Canadian press.
I think I saw it on Global, but anyway... He had a little bit of that, mistakes were made, but he said the workers like about a dozen times. I'm like, wow, that's the most I've heard him say the workers. Because the spin from everybody else was, or at least coming from Quebec, was, well, we can't let that many jobs be in jeopardy. So he's sort of riding that wave a little bit, going, the workers. So
although he's
sounded positively socialist. It was funny.
He got dinged because yesterday Oshawa, the GM plant there, closed. The last car rolled off the line.
So he'd probably rather talk about anything else, right?
Well, somebody made the point, and it wasn't lost on me that, you know, he's burning his environmental cred with going for pipelines. He's burning his, hopey-changey thing with cred with the whole SNC-Lavalin and trying to interfere with that prosecution. He didn't, but, you know, at the same time, it seems like he didn't do much to go to bat for the people in Oshawa. And, you know, I mean, so there's some understandable sore feelings in that regard.
Yeah, that was all, it had a done deal-ish to it. But how long has that been now? That's been like a 2-year countdown, right? Or at least a year.
Was it this time last year?
Yeah, it was this time last year. Yeah. I thought so. Because they always announce these things before Christmas to make people feel better who celebrate the holidays, right? So, and I guess there's it'll affect a whole bunch of feeder plants as well, which is something we don't talk about, probably including here.
Well, I mean, there was an announcement this week that Linamar is going to start building like medical equipment of some kind, if I remember that correctly.
And if they're doing that, then that's a sign, because I mean, parts is their gravy. So
yeah,
we know that, I think when we were talking about electric cars too, it's like, there's not as many parts at all. So
no,
something needs to happen. Years ago, I went to the Doors Open at Linamar when the research wing was new.
Yeah.
And they were doing things like electric lawnmowers with solar panels to charge up. So even then, and that's a few years ago, it looked like that they were trying to diversify, but again, we've diversified completely off topic. So it's all connected though, because Linda Hassenfratz is, I don't know, she's a card carrying liberal, but she is very much in on the what was the panel I saw? It was like early NAFTA talks or the redoing of NAFTA, and went to Washington on that team, right?
During Trump, you mean? During the Trump administration? She went to...
Yes, recently, like not yeah, she years went as, ago, but I
don't,
within the
I don't
past
think it was part
year.
Of the NAFTA renegotiation, but she was part of like a female entrepreneur
That's
kind of
it.
Thing where it was designed to sort of give Ivanka something nice to do.
That's right.
You know, rather than whatever Ivanka Trump does.
So some... whatever the heck that is. So some local content on the Fed scene...
And then, another thing going on with the Liberals this week was the economic update. The deficit might be going bigger than previously suspected. We have the provinces wanting Bill Morneau to look at the whole thing with allocation of transfer payments and look at reshuffling that, which is part of the whole Wexit, like we're being so mistreated, blah, blah,
we're
blah.
We're being so mistreated. Give us money.
Yeah.
The fiscal stabilization program, right?
Yeah.
And they want, there was a bit of a, when was that meeting? It was just a few days ago, right?
Yeah, it was at the beginning of the week.
And they're, when I was reading up on it, they were focusing on healthcare. They want more money for healthcare before saying yes to a PharmaCare program. But I mean, I'm sure if PharmaCare was implemented, they wouldn't say no, obviously, because that does, it's been proven in the long run that saves a bunch of healthcare money when people are getting regular meds. And
well, it would save money on the provincial level for sure.
Yeah. But that's, I think this is the, I was going to say there's a bit of resistance, but the resistance,
there is also the resistance of, because like some provinces have some form of PharmaCare. Like in Ontario, it's for anyone over 65. And, for people who don't have private plans in Quebec, I believe it is universal. But
that's right.
There's various different plans in effect across the province. So there's some needle that has to be thread there.
Yes. And more. I wanted to touch on pipelines because you mentioned it when we were talking about Trudeau, because it was the Trans Mountain Challenge is in federal appeal court this week, or was earlier in the week as well. So four First Nation groups have said that there has been no meaningful consultation. And, you know, it's the usual concerns, the tanker traffic and the whales, everything that's been brought up up until the I'll keep wanting to say the Trans Mountain was canceled. It's just been delayed, and then bought by the federal government. And now this is the pipe that is being twinned. So because the original, well, how old is it? Something like 63 years old, the original Trans Mountain. I'd be far more concerned about the original pipeline than the new one, but you'd never know, right?
So, well, there was also that train accident last week.
Yes, the flaming. And I think we mentioned that last week, too.
We might have.
1.2, what was it? Million or billion liters?
I don't think it was a billion liters.
But might as well have been.
That would have been a lot of, I mean, that would have probably made international news.
Even so, if that was in any of the towns along the line there, it would have been a completely different story.
All right, let's talk about the conservative leadership race. So Andrew Scheer resigned last Thursday. We have two people who have put their hat in the ring so far. One of them is Aaron O'Toole, who is an Ontario MP. He also ran for leadership last time. Another is a new face, Brian Brulotte, the CEO and chair of the employment firm Maxis Staffing and Consulting, who I believe this is his first crack at the bat for running for anything, but he's good to go.
But he's been a behind-the-scenes person for a lot of years. I think, if I understand it right, it's from the Kim Campbell years. Remember her?
Hey, so remember Kim Campbell? Remember she was prime minister for 3.5 hours.
And what was that? Was that 95? Trying to pull that out of the air.
Kim Campbell?
Yeah.
It was 93.
93.
Kretchen,
oh, that's right. It was still a student here. Yeah, yeah. So this, he has been around as well as behind the scenes. Maybe he's like the Brian Top of the conservative. I don't know. Everybody's like, wow. Ooh, Brian Top. Who the heck is that?
I think when you want to compare anyone to anything, you go with Brian Top. He's a Brian Top.
He's a topist. The and of course, the names were flying fast and furious as soon as Scheer disappeared.
Yeah, they're saying Vin Diesel. They were saying Ludacris. No, that's another Fast and Furious.
Darth
Sorry.
Sidious.
Sorry, that was another Fast and Furious.
Nice one. Yeah, yeah. Which one of the 19 movies was it? Yeah, so Peter McKay, of course, and he's being coy. He's like, oh, it's far too soon to say. He was out of the gate.
I don't know, Davey.
Yeah.
Gee, Goliath, who should we pick?
Well, there was an Angus Reid poll. There's already been polling. Angus Reid did a poll.
That didn't take long.
No. So you have Rona Ambrose in first place with 27%. You have Peter McKay in second place with 21%. And then you have Caroline Mulroney and Michelle Rempel tied for third with 9%. Lisa Raitt, Pierre Poilievre tied for fourth at 8%. Kevin O'Leary, Jason Kenney, 7% each. Brad Wall was 6%. I mean,
Brad Wall.
Yeah, it's like,
is he even in the game anymore?
I think he said he doesn't plan on running.
Oh,
I think he's already, like, some of these people
he's
have
like,
already,
it's nice
like
to be nominated,
taken themselves. Like, I don't think Jason Kenney said he's going to do it.
No, I don't.
Brad
think
Wall
he will.
Said
At least
he hasn't.
Not right now.
Doubt that Lisa Raitt is going to do after losing Hamilton like so decisively. You don't really say like, hey, look, now I can be leader after losing your seat. So, I mean,
yeah, I think she's still popular among the gang, but as to whether,
well, she's not that popular. She's got 8%. But
no. I mean, well, among her people, but not among the electorate. But
right.
Who else? Oh, today I heard Jean Chrétien. Or not Jean Chrétien. Jeez. Jean Charest. I'm confusing my Jean.
That would be a twist.
Jean Chrétien running for them. That would be something. Jean Charest is considering it. Now, it's the common thread I found with all of these is that it's they keep defaulting to, well, I'm going to consult with my family, which is something that they all just sort of say.
Well, you should probably consult with your family.
You should consult with your family, but it's like that old, I'm going to spend more time with my family, but are they
really? It's always a family's excuse.
Are they really? And locally, Michael Chong. Was he on your percentages there? No.
Yeah, he was at 5.
He was at 5. But,
he's like
and he was
the
in
bottom.
The game last time, but not.
Well, I mean, he's. The thing about the list they put out is these are all people that people think they want as leader. Michael Chong, like, famously very moderate, refused, like, stood on principle about the whole Quebec identity thing.
The only person ever to step down from
Cabinet position. I mean, he was the minister for sports, so it's not like his life changed that much. But he might argue differently. But, like, Peter MacKay, a lot of people, you know, seem to have, like, fond memories of Peter MacKay, even though a lot of people still think of him as, like, the betrayer.
The sellout.
Like, Rona Ambrose, I think, you know, people, because she was the interim leader for, like, a year, people think they want her more. I mean, I like Rona Ambrose, but I still remember, like, the Helen Lovejoy phase about, like, somebody please think of the children when it came to, like, legalizing marijuana. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe she'd be different if she had, like, the power of the party behind. I don't know.
But she was definitely on the NAFTA council, right?
She was regularly consulted on that. I mean, and that's another thing too, is that, you know, she may be enjoying her, like, just life in the private sector, mm-hmm. doing consulting, and, you know, sometimes that's fine. You know, she.
But I think we said before, it's a case of if the person, well, definitely bilingual, but socially progressive this time around is probably where they're going to be leaning.
Yeah, they can't elect another shooter.
And I did see John Baird wasn't on your list, was he? Because there was no was John Baird. Was that in the Post, that article about he could be our Trump?
Globe.
Like, yeah. What the hell is that?
That was like, the most bizarre thing I've ever read. Because, first of all, nobody wants a Canadian Trump. Trump has like 10% popularity here. And even I'm like, there are really 1 in 10 people who like Donald Trump in Canada. But aside from that, if I were to make a list of people in Canada who could be candidates Trump, John Baird wouldn't make the top 100. And on top of that, too, is like, yeah, I think it's an open secret that he is someone who identifies as homosexual, at least.
Does he, though? Is he out? I mean, he would need...
No, he's not out.
He would need to come out.
He's not out at all. It's an open secret.
Yeah.
I saw somebody react to that this week. It's like, you know what? He's like... He's very much in the closet, but he's more than willing to go down to the village and like hang out and, you know, be seen as an active gay male, knowing that the community will protect him. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit and they didn't like the hypocrisy of that, you know, he wants the protection of the community at the same time, but will do things that don't protect the community from the outside.
Just do a Buttigieg and come out, man. Like,
I mean,
maybe it's part of being a conservative, too. I don't know.
But I mean, it's part of the thing that led to like Andrew Scheer like not being able to like not even just say like I'm not I don't like gay people or something like that. It's just he couldn't say anything about it at all. And he said nothing and you know, people took that.
It was weird. I don't know if he was afraid the church was going to come down on him or his family or the private school that he spent all that money on to send his kids to. Who knows who was going to come down on him?
I don't know.
The priest is going to throw a bong at him or something like we would in Guelph. I don't know. Not a bong. A censer, I think. What is stent in?
Yeah, the priest. Yeah. That's not a bong. Anyway. Speaking of taking a hit.
The Catholic bong, yes. Sorry, Catholics. I didn't mean it actually what I meant.
Donald Trump was impeached last night. Two counts, one on obstruction of justice or obstruction of Congress and the other one on abusing his power. Very decisive votes, party line votes, I will add. But then Nancy Pelosi did a very unusual thing, but probably a very intelligent thing, by saying that they weren't going to send the articles to the Senate right away because...
Ooh, buy some time.
Yeah, because the head juror, Mitch McConnell, said that he was going to work with the defendant to get the trial going in the Senate, which, you know, could you imagine if, like, any other circumstance, the head of the jury said that they were going to work with the defendant?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it is a trial, but it's, like, kind of quasi-legal, isn't it? It's not... They're supposed to be impartial like you would on a jury, but...
You're supposed to be.
It's unprecedented that McConnell's like, well, you know, but I'm actually taking... taking my cues from the White House or whatever. I can't remember how he put
right.
it, but I
no,
did see
that's
that.
The, that's the unusual part, because somebody noted that, like, when Bill Clinton was impeached, the Democrats weren't like going to the White House going, you know, hey, like how are we going to play this? It was very
it was
still very much the veneer of impartiality, even though most Democrats were clearly never going to vote to impeach a president of their own party.
And it was pointed out during Iran-Contra that Reagan on the stand and even though he didn't remember a lot of things, he did give up documents. He was very willing participant in that, I guess. But the difference with this White House is like, no, nobody's going there. And I don't want you to say anything. They want 100% loyalty.
And Trump hasn't invoked executive privilege even once. This is just like him just saying it and them doing it. Because
it's kind of mob like too. It's kind of like, you're gonna follow this, like you're gonna say this. How many times you hear witch hunt in the past? Like, oh God. You guys need some phraseology, man. Like, really need to like mix it up a bit.
Well, he wrote that letter to Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, did you see it?
The 6-page.
Oh, I tried so hard to read it, but it's like it's like one of his tweets, but like epic, and
it's a threaded tweet from the last 3 years. Yeah.
He definitely got some help with it, but there you can.
Well,
Trump
know who he had help
there.
With? He had help from Stephen Miller, the resident white nationalist in the White House.
Yikes.
He had from the
perfect
Eric Ulrich, who is the legal affairs staffer in the White House. And then he had help from the chief of staff's office. Nowhere in writing this legal letter to the Speaker of the House did he get the advice of the White House counsel, which you would think if you're writing a document about the legality of something, you would go to the lawyer at the White House. I should say lawyers, because there's more than one.
Oh, there has to be,
And yeah, so I mean, so that was a little bizarre. And yeah, in the text of this letter, he says things like, the people at the Salem witch trial got more due process than me.
And those witches got dunked in the chairs. It was more fair.
Well, it's like worse than that, because, you know, I have an ancestor who lived in Dartmouth, Mass. Around the time of the witch trials. Her name was Alice Lake. Her husband died, and then her baby was stillborn. So she walked around town talking to her dead baby. She had what we probably call now postpartum depression. And they hanged her. They thought she was a witch and they hanged her.
Wow.
On July the 3rd, 1739.
Donald
Trump thinks he's more persecuted than Alice Lake.
Bless Alice Lake. Wow, that's wild. Have you been doing your ancestry?
My mom does.
Excellent.
That's my mom's hobby.
But you've got enough hobbies. You don't have to.
I have enough hobbies. Yeah. My mom tells me things, and
we need to find out how we're related, like Bernie Sanders and Larry David, right?
They were separated.
They're cousins.
At birth.
Are you surprised?
They,
I don't know.
They were separated at birth. But yeah, it just.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It was so ridiculous.
The thing is that he then goes to, he's presenting two faces, right? Because then he writes this like complete and utter gibberish, 6 pages of complete and utter BS, and he sends it on White House letterhead to the Speaker of the House.
Yeah,
and then he goes to his rally, and I was like, doesn't hurt me at all. And it's like, you're clearly lying, because why would you write 6 pages of mental barf and send it to the Speaker if you're not worried about it at all? And everything leaking out of the White House and saying that he's freaking out, that he's having like a mental meltdown.
I bet he is.
In real time.
Yeah.
That, you know, going on Twitter and screaming witch hunt, and this is the
all
worst
caps.
Atrocity that's ever been committed in the history of ever.
I haven't logged on to Twitter today since early this morning. Do you see anything? You follow Donald like I do, right?
Well, I can look it up.
Okay.
I have Twitter open.
While he's doing that, I was just curious because that is the reflection of, you know, you need to sort of divine from the tweets what's going on in Trump's mind. But
oh, okay. There's a black and white picture of Trump pointing at you, the viewer, and it says, in reality, they're not after me. They're after you. I'm just in the way.
Is it a retweet? Yeah, it's got to be a retweet because he doesn't do his own stuff. So,
and that's the thing. Yesterday he tweeted this USA Today Suffolk University poll where it shows him beating Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Michael Bloomberg, and Pete Buttigieg.
All of them. They're all running against me,
which
and I beat them all.
Like a rare poll. Like, it doesn't even say like where, like, because there are polls that are like taken in like swing states, there are polls that are taken nationwide, there are polls that are taken among likely voters. So like there's absolutely no context here. There's no margin of error. It's just this thing like Trump leads a general election, and
it's margin of Trump.
It's like,
right?
Well, how I mean, how
it was
sensitive
a perfect
are
poll.
You? It's crazy.
It was the greatest poll. This is the only poll that matters.
And then he retweeted this woman named Rena, who it seems to be
random. Like, she's a blogger.
She's, well, she has
from
this,
a red state.
Her Twitter page says Rena, no last name, retweeted by @RealDonaldTrump, followed by Rudy Giuliani, Dinesh D'Souza, so all the wackos. And it, and it just says, today and always, we stand with real Donald Trump. The impeachment is biggest scam. Grammatically wrong.
His biggest
this
scam.
This impeachment is biggest scam in American history. The Democrats are with a capital A, disgraceful. And come November 2020, they will feel the almighty wrath of God. Cool.
Whoa. I wish somebody would tweet something like that about us.
Well, then we're like, yeah, the almighty cool. wrath of God. I don't
I'd
know.
Be like, yeah, cool. So anyway, how, did Pelosi say how long they were going to stall? Because this is significant. They could pretend, they could stall for a long time, can't they?
Well, they
just
can,
let this ride out and sort of pick away at it, right?
Well,
there's
it
no
goes,
timeline.
No, they can.
It?
They don't have to send it anywhere. I mean, and they can keep investigating stuff all they want, and which is what they should do, because it's very like you have to look back at this, right? You know, Robert Mueller testified in front of Congress. It was like July 25, I think, and by that point, everyone was like, okay, this is not going to lead to anything. And then the next day. He goes on the phone to Zelensky, and it's like, "Hey, bud, want to like totally destroy Joe Biden with me?" I'm paraphrasing, but
what about
it just shows like he could have skated. He could have skated if he had exerted a monochrome of self-control, but he couldn't, and he didn't, and now he's here, and they had to impeach. They had to impeach. They had to do something, otherwise. You know, I hear a lot of pundits say, well, what about 2020? So can we just vote him out in 2020? It's like, dude, he's already screwing around in the election 1 year out. Do you think you're going to get a fair election if you just let him just ignore it and cross your fingers and hope for the best? And then on top of this, too, you have judges in Wisconsin and Georgia throwing people off the voter rolls this week, too. And it's like, you really think this is going to be a fair fight? Even impeached. It's not going to be a fair fight. You think Donald Trump's tonight going to sit at the White House and going, well, I've really learned my lesson here, guys.
Because he's probably going to get on this kind of, why doesn't Pelosi send those documents to the Senate? And then
well,
we can have a real, but that'll be the next thing. But
yeah.
Because I'd heard one theory that they could pretend, the Democrats could potentially hold on to this, ride it out, and just, you know, the word impeach will continuously be in the news. And then the one possibility that if the Senate House changes and then a majority of Democrats are elected, then he's definitely done if he wins.
Well,
I guess there's lots
too.
Of possible outcomes from this, right?
Because but although
they're not going to send it right away. It's not like they need to, if they don't need to file it right away, then they won't. They just want to keep the word impeach in
right,
the
because
news
even
as
though
long
Mitch
as possible.
McConnell is acting his usual level of dickishness, he is still, you know, if he had the votes to just sort of let this go through and just get it over with, he would do it. He would be insisting on it. But he knows he's got Mitt Romney, he's got Susan Collins, he's got Jody Ernst, he's got Cory Gardner.
He's got his own squad.
All Chuck Schumer needs is three. Three to secure the rules of how this is going to go.
Mm.
And those are the people who need to show that they put up a fair fight if they have a hope of holding on to their seats because they're running in blue or purplish.
Purplish, yeah.
Seats. So, I mean, those are the ones in trouble, and those are the ones who are going to determine how this goes. But we're going to leave that there.
Yes.
Because we have to go to our friends, your downtown Guelph friends, who are standing by, and we're going to talk about homelessness and poverty in Guelph with them. After the break, you are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
To the station, that was Territories from our random pile of stuff. The song is called The Lockdown, and that was on a flexi disc, which is a really awesome medium that's making a comeback. They used to stick them in magazines so you could get an idea of what was going on. And that is on Pirates Press Records.
Is that like when you used to get AOL, like 3 1/4 discs in the mail?
Yes, I am that old. I remember.
No, I remember that too.
Oh, you do? So yeah, you're old as well.
Yeah.
Yay.
And then they sent you CD-ROMs. Mm.
Somewhere there's a pile of them in the station waiting for us to play.
Hey, do you younger kids know about CD-ROMs?
Yeah, I have like one or two kicking.
Excellent. All right. So in studio, we are joined by Siegfried, Lily Brunt, and Kate Nixon, who are among your downtown Guelph friends. So thanks for coming in, guys. Why don't we just start by talking a little bit about your group and who you are and what you're trying to accomplish?
So essentially, we are a group of like-minded people that sort of envision how the poverty scene and the marginalized community in Guelph, sort of how we could help, and we all have the same vision. We all come from different organizations, different backgrounds, sort of different like levels of education, but we all have the same like mindset. And basically our role in the downtown community is to play a friend role to marginalized folks in the downtown core, while also trying to support other people who are doing similar initiatives to us, and also trying to fill in gaps within the community that we see.
So talk a little bit about that gaps. I mean, what were you seeing that maybe wasn't getting done helping people out, helping out the marginalized, that you've said to yourselves, we have to step up? You know, what is kind of driving your work?
Definitely something that we all felt really strongly about was the lack of a warming center in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
That has recently come into effect within the past few days, actually. That's going to be set in place on Friday, so tomorrow. But that was something that we were really like strongly for this winter, because last winter we were very much like seeing a crisis in the downtown core with people not having anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we've actually been able to really advocate for a year now, and happily it's had a good result. But also something else is we see that there is lack of dinners on certain nights of the week, so people aren't having access to 3 meals a day, which I think is something that we can all really take for granted. So that's something that we're trying to fill right now. Sunday nights is probably the worst night for people, so we're in the midst of trying to fill that gap right now.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that, you know, maybe politically we're kind of in a moment where we're seeing more discussion about homelessness issues, poverty issues in city council. And, you know, how are you guys feeling about that from the other end? Because, you know, you guys are doing your thing, which is great. But at the same time, there is levels of responsibility, and it's not just on you guys who are, you know, trying to do your own thing with whatever resources you can scramble, but there is an actual government response that's mandated too. You know, how are we feeling about that these days?
And a lot of what we see is just that discussion. It's been talked about over and over again, doing things, but then every time we see city council, they're just pushing it off further and further. But they pat themselves on the back for having the conversation, while people out here, like, none of us have the luxury of being paid to do this, but we put in a lot of time and a lot of our own funds. And, like, you know, you think council being paid to do their job would be able to think a little deeper into how community members are sacrificing their own financial well-being and time to help out in this gap that we're seeing every day.
Right. Part of that too, though, and I realize your frustration, because I think a lot of people share it, but, you know, there is the apparatuses of government too, and, you know, there's a lot of finger-pointing, buck-passing, but there are sort of like multiple levels of responsibility, and, you know, how do you guys sort of navigate the politics of this too when you're trying to advocate?
Yeah, so that's something we actually, like, we've taken on that role as well. It's something that makes us different from other people that are sort of in the out-of-poverty community, is sort of playing an advocacy role within the community. So we've been analyzing sort of how these conversations take place at City Hall and how we can contribute to the conversation on the end of like out of poverty work, because mm-hmm. Oftentimes we are seeing that voice is not represented. It's frustrating for us. I'm not gonna lie. It's definitely a very frustrating process. We do see a lot of times that the blame, I guess, is being shifted all the time. And I know, like a year ago, January, Mayor Cam Guthrie was saying that he has dropped the ball on this for the past 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and that this was urgent. But then here we are 3 years later, and we sort of really haven't moved in any different direction in terms of the city.
Mm.
And it's just really, like, I think a lot of times it's a lot of empty words behind the city. It's a lot of promises to do better and never any action behind that.
Mm. To Cam's credit, he was did a Facebook town hall last night where he did say he was behind. He came to this late. I think that was an exact quote, that he came to this late. These things do compound, though. I mean, it's been 20 years since social housing was downloaded on the province. It's hard to turn a ship around in the middle of the ocean and, you know, on a hair turn, right? And do you think that maybe, I don't know, it seems like one of these issues where I like you, you know, share that kind of lack of patience. You know, we should have been dealing with this 20 years ago, mm-hmm. but, you know, how can we move quicker, do you think? You know, because it's not just a matter of the political will, because I do think the political will is there, but it's also a matter of, as we said, the multiple levels of government, multiple agencies involved. It's that big ship that you can't turn around quickly enough.
Well, there's a lot of things we can do immediately, like implementing harm reduction instead of giving police in this city more funding, mm-hmm. which will only make things 10 times worse on the people we're trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
We have council members, including the mayor, with several developer donors that have large empty spaces that could offer warming centers. They just decide not to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean, that gets into something, too, that I've heard it said that the city has enough shelter beds to cover the needs, but it is there is difficulty in getting people into shelter. Some people don't feel safe. Some people have pets who are not welcomed in the shelter. You know, there are a variety of concerns. But, you know, you guys deal with the people who were trying to get people into shelters. And so, you know, from your experience, what's the delta that is sort of keeping people from getting the shelter space that's being offered?
So actually there is not enough beds. It's not enough beds for the amount of people that are requiring beds. They're putting people in motels at the moment. And that's been something that's been going on for months now. And there are also like a certain timeline as well where like you get access to the shelter. And if, you know, if you outstay that,
right,
you're forced kind of back on to the streets. And also if you miss the deadlines. So if you're 5 minutes late, for example, you're also put back onto the streets. So that's sort of what we're seeing more so than people being reluctant, because in reality, nobody wants to be cold. And
right.
there are some factors as well that are definitely red tape for people,
mm-hmm.
Such as paraphernalia. Yes, there is pets. That is an element as well. But for the most part, I find the city just likes to sort of put blame on those people and say, well, they're not taking the help we're offering, when that's not the case, because we're not offering enough, in my opinion, and people aren't being able to access the things that they need to be.
Right. When you say paraphernalia, you mean drug paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. So they may be users and
substance dependent. Yeah.
Substance dependent. Thank you. Yes.
Which is a lot of the homeless community that we have. Substance abuse goes hand in hand with it quite often.
Right.
And we don't offer the type of help to be wanting every single person who's on the street to be in a bed sober. Because what's right. keeping you warm and moderately functioning on the street is often continuing your addictions.
Right. You raise an interesting point, because I think people forget this too, that what is it, you get 28 days mm-hmm. consecutive in the shelter and then you can't go back for 3 months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a huge red tape.
Yeah.
For a bunch of people, because like, no, who can pull up housing in that amount of time? Like with,
right.
with the amount, like with the with the red tape on housing, too. It's really hard to find housing you can be eligible for, especially within such a small window of time. So that's definitely something we're seeing. Of course, we would like to see affordable housing being implemented in the city. But for now, we think there just needs to be adequate warming centers, which is in the process, and just more beds available for people.
So you guys work downtown with Ed Pickersgill of the mm-hmm. Bench, and you're mm-hmm. sort of, I guess, in tandem, but an offshoot of that. And I take it, are you there almost every day, or just is it just one day a week these days? You're there on and off, right?
We're there as often as we can be. Everybody else also has jobs and are students.
Of course,
so we're there as much as we possibly can to build these connections and help out.
Because mm-hmm. I've noticed that from in talking to Ed, too, that there are certain people that appear a lot. And my question would be, if we were able to and said, okay, let's build as much affordable housing as this town needs tomorrow for immediate need, mm-hmm. what would your estimate be in terms of the number of people? I mean, it obviously goes beyond the bench and beyond you folks being downtown, but is it would an apartment of 100 take care of it, or is it?
No, yeah,
we'd say probably close to
500.
500,
because if it's 130 changing number
right, because the
number
by name
that
list,
they're
right?
saying that the 130 is our confirmed homeless people, but we know that it's a lot more than that, including people who couch surf, people who are home insecure, people who just won't admit to being homeless,
and little patches in the woods around town, which is at least six that I know of, or there's at least two on the way here from the ward. So, that's significant too. Wow, mm-hmm. so it is that high.
So I mean, where's the disparagement though? You guys are saying one thing, the cities and the agencies are saying another thing. I don't think anyone's kind of being disingenuous about it, but it strikes me that there's really no hard facts about the extent of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
there's
it's a guess.
It's a guess.
It's like it could be 500, it could be 1,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a huge lack of transparency. So our numbers are different because we actually communicate with these people face-to-face.
Right. With all due respect for, like, the politicians in the city as well, I don't see any of them doing any groundwork with homeless folks. So I don't really feel that when they pull out sort of these examples and these scenarios that it's as legitimate as ground workers.
Mm. But, I mean, it all goes to something Lily said, too, that, you know, couch surfers, people you don't typically think of homeless. And I think when Cam was describing the work of going into the by name list, he talked about, you know, workers, you know, finding people on the streets. And that fits a very tidy, very particular definition of homelessness that doesn't get into things like substance abuse or mental health, or people who are, you know, just trying to find a place to stay tonight with one friend and then maybe going to another friend's house the next night. What do you think? How would this be better? If they were to invite you guys in and say, like, how can we, you know, get this data, get better data? How does that help, do you mm-hmm. think? How would you guys, what suggestions would you guys offer?
Definitely communication with other people that are in this field that are, like, Edward Pickersgill, for example. I think that the city needs to do a lot more communication with that guy. That guy knows the inside out about the street, people living in the downtown core by name and by scenario. He gets over like 300 visitors a week at the bench. So I think like communication with people like that, for instance, should be a priority. I think honestly, even getting better data, I would like to honestly see politicians come out onto the streets and learn about these people that they're talking about in their conversation.
Learn their names. Like, where they come
make
from,
contact
who they
with
are.
Them.
Yeah. a lot of you guys are young people. I know that you were invited to do the Breezy Breakfast that the Phil and James do every week. And you know, you guys were at the town hall Dan Gibson had last month regarding the supportive housing proposal for Beaumont. Do you feel like you're being heard? Do you feel like this people are engaging you, or are the people like maybe taking you for granted?
I think it's like a 50-50. That Breezy Breakfast thing, we got a lot of people who would like to be involved going forward. We have good connections with Rodrigo Gallo now, mm-hmm. who is clearly progressive and would love for things to change in the same ways that we want.
James Gordon.
Yeah, Phil Ault. But
So you have allies, but it's not
yes, we have allies, but
yes, better than where we started.
Right. So, can you guys be a voice for the people you're talking about here for a minute? Because when you talk to them about what their needs are, what they would like to see, I think that, and you might agree that those of us who are well clothed, well fed, well homed, make certain assumptions about what people who are not any of those things might need in order to help them feel safe, in order to help them build a life for themselves. So when you talk to them and you ask them about their needs, what do they tell you?
Honestly, they never ask for anything that's unreasonable. Everybody likes to think that they ask for handouts, that they're asking for too much, but really they're asking for things that are really just basic human rights and basic things, you know, that like about dignity. For example, a lady said to me, she said, because she learned about sort of the work we were doing, and she said, it's going to sound better, like, it was just really sad because people should be able to voice what they're experiencing, but she said, it's going to sound better coming from you, but can you please tell the city that I would really like to have a washing machine that I don't have to pay part of my OW money for? Oh. She had nowhere to wash her clothes.
Right.
And that's something that I was like, wow, you know, like, that's so true. I didn't consider that before, right? Because we're so privileged that we right. don't have to think twice about that.
Yeah.
And there was that, and there was a guy who said, I have nowhere to put my belongings. He has to carry everything on his back
right.
all the time. And he's got nowhere safe to put his belongings. And then he said, if you leave something at a shelter locker for a few days, it's thrown into the garbage, and it's everything, like all of his belongings. And I'm thinking, wow, I can't imagine having to carry everything I own on my back every day.
Yeah.
It's just things like that. Of course, they you know, affordable housing, they always ask us if we could look around for anything that's within their range, which is really, really sad, too. But it's always things like that, just really basic human needs, really.
Sometimes they really just want someone to talk to who's not going to look in the opposite direction and pretend that they're somehow assaulting them for existing in the same space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The washing machine thing is so interesting because, I mean, when you think about... Yeah, you have to have access to one. There are coin, you know, laundries around, but you also have to have the coin. It also takes like a roll of loonies. You have to be able to go into a bank and get your roll of loonies. And yeah, just you're right. It does make you think about your privilege.
Mm-hmm. It really does.
I wanted to ask you guys about the NIMBY factor too. I mean, that came up, I think, pretty obviously when we were talking about the Beaumont. And that was just... Mm-hmm. One counselor saying, hey, why don't we look at this piece of land? And we've heard a lot about the concerns about those residents there. But it does strike me that, and again, I don't want to keep referring back to the town hall Cam did last night, but I mean, there were things said about people being concerned about the kids in their neighborhood. If there was supportive housing in their neighborhood, to be concerned about letting the kids out.
It was worse than that, honestly, dealing with the town hall.
Yeah.
They had issues with their autistic kids and disabled kids are somehow intellectually unable to take care of themselves. Mm. And that homeless people are these horrible, dangerous people.
Mm.
And it was said by several different people who thought that was okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just part of... This is a battle on, like, so many fronts. One of them is just, like, getting people the help they need. The other part is... destigmatizing everybody. Mm-hmm. And then it's almost like you can't do one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fight this battle one battle at a time.
Destigmatizing would be the first.
Yeah.
That we need to be able to make proper strides to help people.
And we were trying to do that with our presence at the town hall that Dan Gibson had, because we were monitoring the comments and the reaction of the community. And we were really disappointed. I thought Guelph was better than that. I'm not going to lie. I was really sad to see the things that people were saying. I saw everything from homeless people are going to kill the kids that live in the group home down the street to autistic children aren't capable of taking care of themselves and a homeless person's going to kill them or hurt them. And we actually have somebody that's part of your Downtown Guelph Friends that was able to speak to that. And she said, I was homeless and I'm autistic and never once did anybody try to target me that was homeless. So she was able to speak to that. And sort of show people the other side to that, because oftentimes that narrative was being given a platform and being amplified. But we were really appalled by the comments, and we showed up as sort of a counterpoint to those comments because we knew that town hall was going to be a very much a conversation around with those kinds of things being thrown around. So we showed up in support of our friends living in the downtown community and living in like marginalized. And I have to say, I was disappointed in Dan Gibson's response to our presence there.
He was not happy at all. He came out looking for me specifically, actually, because I was asking him questions on Facebook about, like, you know, if this isn't a thing about, if this isn't about profit over profit over people's lives, if this isn't about villainizing people, then, like, what is it about? And he wouldn't answer me at all, but he came out looking for me very angrily for us having signs that just say people over property.
And it's, you know, that's almost the most severe example. One of the things that stuck out to me and still sticks out to me is about that meeting was that I can't remember who said, but it was someone who was with the friends who said, you know, I wouldn't mind having this in my backyard. And somebody asked her like, oh, where do you own land? And she's like, oh, I don't own, I rent. And there were like at least half a dozen people who snickered or hurrumped.
And scoffed at them.
Like, they would not have had a right answer to that no matter what they said. They would have laughed at them no matter what.
Right. But it speaks to a certain point of view. And by all means, it's not all people on this issue, but that, you know, some people have rights, and those are the people who own land and are property owners and homeowners. Bless them; they're able to achieve the dream. But you know, people just have a basic dream of having somewhere safe to sleep, and that's hard enough to achieve for some of those people.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. And when Mel shared that they would be very happy to have people on their property, and people scoffed at them when they shared that they rent the community. They're a student.
Yeah.
And it was almost like everyone in that room was sort of looking down on them and sort of just for renting property. And that was pretty disappointing too. And yeah, I was really shocked. I have to say, like, the behavior in that room for adults was certainly questionable and very sad on our end of things.
Let's wrap it up with something a bit more positive.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of help do you guys want from the community? You know, what kind of assistance, like donations, anything you're looking for right now?
Donations are always welcome of any kind. We will not turn anything down.
Specifically right now, because Christmas is coming up and it's cold, we're asking for donations of like $2 coffee cards, things like that, because being a paying customer allows you to be inside and not be allowed to be kicked out. And there are some issues in Guelph with homeless people not being able to hang out where it's warm.
Right.
So having a coffee in front of them really changes that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that can look like anything as well. With our we're also doing at the bench on Monday, December 23rd, we're going to have like a free market for people, because Edward Pickersgill was saying how folks are feeling really stressed this time of year because they can't afford Christmas gifts and or Hanukkah gifts. And we wanted to be able to provide free gifts that we, you know, that we kind of like got. So we're looking for stuff like that right now. And yeah, the $2 Tim Horton gift card is super helpful. We wanted to give that as a gift from us to people, because some people aren't going to be having, you know, a traditional holiday like we all envision, right, when we think of the holidays. And I think just having something being given to them and something to sort of say, like, there are people that do care definitely helps. Like today, for example, somebody donated. So we had like a bunch of donations of boots and coats, and then we had honey as well that was donated to us from Tri-City Bee Rescue. And, you know, it's just like things like that. And it's like things that people are thinking about them and, you know, and trying to think what they might like and donating forward.
So how can people get in touch with you guys?
Social media.
The email is yourdtguelphfriends@gmail.ca/.com.
All right.
Facebook is Your Downtown Guelph Friends. We can be reached by phone number as well, 519-265-8099.
That's not it.
That's yours. That's my number. All right. Are we good with the number?
We're good.
Okay,
we're
good.
I thought we were using mine.
Well, we appreciate you guys stopping by. We appreciate the work you're doing, and keep up the good work. And thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Happy holidays.
So that was Kate Lilly and Siegfried, who are with the York Downtown Guelph Friends. And we do have to wrap up the show, unfortunately. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we'll have our regular holiday shows. So the political movie show is next Thursday. And then the Thursday after that is the annual award show. You can connect to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can listen to the show again every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, and you can find my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
Scott Hertz on Facebook, Scott Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spanderbook.wordpress.com.
All right, and stay tuned for DJ Sounds. Good to be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back, sort of, not quite in person, but we will be here in some form.
Our clones will be here
next Thursday at 5 p.m. And we'll see you for Open Sources.